How's it going, everybody? This is Preston Johnson at Sports Cheetah on Twitter, and I am back in the studio here with Mark Seidel. He is producing the show, and I'm excited. It's a new football season, obviously. I want to bring back the podcast. We're going to talk a little bit more about A Petty Moose, and I'll get into the naming of that. But I have my good friend here, Matt Lindemann. I should say Caesar's very own Matt Lindemann now in the studio, back behind the mic. Man, how you doing?
Cheetah, man, it's been a while. It's been like, what, 18 months probably, something like that, since we did one of these?
We did a VSiN show once where I just absolutely botched it.
Oh, yeah, that's
it.
Right.
And, they never wanted us back after that.
Yeah.
So that's a lie, actually.
Yeah, you were awful. I was great, but yeah, I totally ruined it for you.
You shined, I think, because I was so bad.
Yeah.
But we're back doing the podcast. We're going to do it weekly. We're going to take some calls like I was doing on the show last year, or I should say last season. We're going to talk about some other stuff, and we'll have some topics that we hit on every week, you know, between us and between the calls. But I wanted to start with Matt because he does have a new gig over at Caesars. He's doing a similar type of thing, I imagine, that he was doing previously at CG. But I was kind of just curious the landscape of all of the legalization stuff and how the ban was lifted and other states are bringing that back. Give us a little, I guess, taste of how things are different now than they even were just 2 years ago behind the counter.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting with the expansion. You know, Caesars is one of the first places that they're jumping into Mississippi and New Jersey. So we're kind of expanding into those states and experimenting with those, you know, booking in those states and those different systems. So it's a lot of fun, and it's, you know, a really exciting time right now where everyone's kind of, you know, everyone doesn't know where it's going to go or what's going to open up. So we're kind of, you know, we're adding to our staff, and, you know, it's really blowing up. So it's been fun, and I'm, you know, I'm really excited to be back on that side. You know, I had plenty of time off, you know, betting and grinding it out. So I'm really excited to be back, and, you know, football season's already been a blast so far. So hopefully we can keep it rolling.
I imagine for a lot of entities, whether it be like something like Caesars or just any, you know, old website out there, the idea is you want to be as prepared as you possibly can, whether that be having a bunch of people in place, like you said, hiring a bunch of new you know, employers, or just possibly having things set up for, so it looks like Atlanta's about to score. There's a rain delay, by the way, so people that are going to be calling in, Atlanta got all the money in the world. And everyone was like, maybe we should get cute and bet the Eagles. I luckily didn't, but it looks like Atlanta's going to score to open this up. But I imagine being prepared, like you said, and being ready when the other states do legalize things, just being able to jump in and start, I guess, profiting for one, but offering the options for people to bet and stuff in other, I guess, accommodating for everybody possible.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see kind of what happens when it grows. You know, do they split up the risk teams and they have them going to different regions, or they do it by state? Do they keep everything in Vegas? You know, I don't know how it'll work if you have 20, 25 different states that are legalized, how it'll work. So, I don't know, it's really fun to kind of see how it's all unfolding. And you know, you can already see, like you've seen some of the stuff from ESPN's been covering the last few weeks in Mississippi and New Jersey. It's really blowing up, so I don't even know what the landscape's going to look like in 6 months, but, you know, it's exciting to get an opportunity to offer a lot of different things that appeal to people in different parts of the country.
Right on. Well, it's good to have you back in the studio again. I'm excited to do this. We actually have a new name for the podcast. I could have gone with Last Word Cheetah again last year. That was fine. You know, it worked. But I had an idea. I had a conversation, actually, a couple weeks ago that made it official. But I had kind of had this concept of what I wanted to bring, I guess, to this show, the vibe and the attitude I wanted to bring to the show. And there's two main reasons why I changed it to A Petty Moose. So I'm going to go through those for the next couple minutes, and then hopefully we get some callers. If not, we'll jump into our topics. I'll start with this one. So there was, for people that don't actually recognize, my background is in sports psychology. If you didn't know, I have a master's degree in sports psychology. I worked with athletes and coaches. And, you know, the thing there is trying to optimize player performance or coach performance by training their mental skills. Like, that's what we're trying to do as sports psychologists. And I loved it. And what intrigued me even before that was just psychology in general and how it applies to life. And there's so many vast, you know, red zone, almost intercepted. I love when you throw that from like half a yard out of the goal line. All right, I'm going to start getting sidetracked from this game.
Let's focus here. I see you getting sidetracked over here. Let's go.
I'm trying to bet Philadelphia live after Atlanta scores first. But
I'm going to have to take the reins here in a minute.
So what's always intrigued me more than anything, I think, is like the psychology of actually gambling or betting, whether it be, you know, poker, DFS, sports betting, and how that can kind of change someone's actions and processes, and how that one game or a bad beat or a moose right on a Saturday can kind of tilt what you decide to do later that day. And how, and the example I use all the time is the Hawaii game at night, and it's happened to me a ton of times, and they went for it and didn't get it on fourth down. So Eagles on the, you know, on the one with the stop, and that's it. That's my last of the coverage of this NFL game. But that Hawaii game, no one's betting otherwise. There's no positive, you know, expected value. There's no edge otherwise, but you're betting that because of something else that happened earlier that day. Changes your psyche. You want to try to chase or get that money back. And, you know, ultimately, you know, those petty mooses is what we're going to call them. You know, something I think that's a really important part of if you're trying to do this more seriously is getting over that. Even like correlating it to there's life obstacles. You don't want any one thing to kind of keep you down. And so that idea and that kind of vibe and attitude of getting, you know, over those and then moving on and then attacking that next weekend of games, the next board of games is going to be important, whether that be with you guys actually calling in and talking about them, which I'll get to the reason why. So I always laugh when people on Twitter complain about people that complain about bad beats. So I've gone on the record saying this before. I actually think it's really positive. And what's wrong with someone who, let's say, and we text each other occasionally when weird stuff happens. And I think it's actually really positive to vent, even on Twitter, right? You vent for a couple minutes about whatever game, whatever bad beat or moose at the end of the game. You get it out of your system. You put it aside. You move on. And that's that. Like, that's way better than going down the street to the local sports bar, taking a bunch of shots or drinking a bunch of beers and then betting the second half of the Hawaii game at 2 a.m. If you want to laugh at people who are complaining, I think it's a really healthy kind of mentality approach to just like get it out of your system and then move on to the next game or the next day. And so that's kind of what we want to do here too. If you guys want to call in, complain about your moose of the weekend or something, we'll listen. We'll get your mindset straight. And then you can be set to tackle the next slate of games. But the second reason, and this is the funny one that actually kind of confirmed this title for the podcast, A Petty Moose. There's a guy on Twitter that trolls me a lot. And his Twitter handle is A Petty Moose. And and this has been, I think, maybe like 2 years ago he started doing it last year. And he came back, obviously, this season a couple weeks ago. And the best part about it, so anyone that really trolls, there's not many people that do it anymore. But anyone that actually trolls me, you know, he says, I suck, I have losing picks, I'm a fish, et cetera. I just say, okay, well, you know, if you want to go in a head-to-head contest, like, I'm happy to do that. Or if you want to book my action, all of this losing action at plus 110, all of these losing bets, go ahead. And he didn't want to do anything. He never has. And I got to the point where I was like, the principle of it, like, let's bet $1 a game. I'll give you plus 110 because you're booking my minus 110 action. And, you know, we'll see how things turn out. And never did. But the best part about this, his trolling just like doesn't make sense. And it's just so bad. He's got to do better. And just a couple weeks ago, an example is this Hawaii game where I posted on Twitter publicly. I said, I bet plus 711 on Hawaii. I bet the money line.
Right.
And I said it in a roundabout way, like, you know, plus 711 is worth getting laughed at in the second quarter when they're down 21-0 and Colorado State's, you know, just cruising. Because most of the time, the plus 711 dog is not going to be up in the second quarter. Colorado State's going to be ahead. It won, and he was getting at me for talking about how I had, you know, Hawaii money line. And he's like, everyone had Hawaii money line that day. The day that Colorado State went from minus 14 to minus 17 and a half was the day everyone had Hawaii. That's the level of his trolling where it just makes no sense. At least makes some sense if you're going to try it. Like, say, Preston, you're fat, your beard is ugly. Like, that at least makes some sort of sense right?
Yeah,
right? I would be like, you know what? You're right. That's pretty good. So, anyways, I was thinking about it. I was like, there's nothing really more petty that I could do than to name my new show for this season, the new pod, A Petty Moose, after this guy's Twitter handle. So this is it. This is A Petty Moose. We are giving it a go, episode one. And I believe we actually have our first caller. So let's give it a go, Mark. We have Larry on the line. Larry, how are you doing tonight?
Good, guys. Wanted to call in and get your opinion on the Liberty Army game. I admittedly don't know that much about Liberty and had a tough time adjusting after their weird game last week, but I've got that game 14, and after the last little move today, I guess they got me trapped, but wanted to get y'all's thoughts on it and see if I'm missing anything on that one.
You know, I told Cheetah before we came in, I said, man, I guarantee you someone calls and asks about an obscure game first thing. And sure enough, Liberty Army is about as obscure as it gets on this card. You know, I've looked at it a little bit. Cheetah, I don't know how much you looked at it. I, like you, have the game higher. I think I had it in the 13 range. But Army is one of those teams they're really tough to lay double digits with. You know, the way they bleed the clock and come out and run the ball, you know, it's just really hard to lay. And, you know, I think I looked and Monken's something like 3-9 as a home favorite, you know, the last couple of years. So they're not very good at home laying a bunch of points. And this Liberty team, you know, they did win 52-10. They looked great last week. I thought the score was a little deceiving. They were only up like 14-10 midway through the third. So I'm not really sure if they're as good as they looked in that game. So I would lean towards Army, but it's probably just a pass for me because I just can't really lay that many points with them.
Yeah, I have the same thought process. So my like straight power rating number is 14, but Matt made a good point. So when you're you're looking at games, whether they just be a straight run team like San Diego State or Stanford, or you're looking at a game like an option team in Army, they run the ball and eat up so much clock that your number kind of is compressed, or should be compressed, because there's going to be less possessions than what would maybe be a standard game or an average game. And so I think it's fine if your number is 14, if you kind of say, okay, this is probably more like a 12 or 13 point game. But now that it's moved down to 7.5, I'm with you. For me, it's Army or nothing. And the one thing I would say, Larry, is you really have no harm in waiting for maybe getting a 7 now. There's not a huge difference between taking, if you see it start moving up, taking 8 or 8.5 or 9, even if you have to. There's just such little value and edge in those numbers. I mean, now it'll probably land 9 that I said that, or 8 that I said
right,
that.
Right, right.
But if the value in waiting and potentially even getting a 7, if this keeps coming down, I think we'll go a long way. And, you know, if you end up betting it at 8.5, 9, that's fine too, versus a 7.5 or an 8. So that's the side I lean on too. Do you have any other questions, Larry, before we let you go?
No, that's it, guys. Thank you.
Cool. Hey, good luck this weekend. It's Thanks. Tough. Liberty was, no one, they were the sharp side and they pounded, and I think they kind of turned into this weird, it's their first FBS game, home opener, season opener. Like, is so common in public to say that they were at least first half going to come out and be
really
that, I got scared out and I didn't end up betting a ton on the plus 6.5. I found some 7 and I ended up betting a little bit of the day of the game. So that was it. But it's a tough team to really, I think, such a high variance just team to actually bet for the first couple of weeks till we get some more data on how they actually react to multiple situations.
Yeah, I think it's tough to kind of know with those new FBS teams, knowing their power rating going into the year. And, you know, you got that Old Dominion number. I think I had it pretty close there, but looking at, you know, this week, how far do you really adjust off that game? So it's just kind of tough to know. So I'll probably just, you know, pass on this one.
Let's kind of segue into it. So we're going to have a segment every week, because there's always a couple of these games each Saturday or each week, kind of an overreact or not segment. And so we'll kind of segue into that. Liberty isn't, I don't think, one of the teams we're going to talk about. But one team that I wanted to bring up, is whether I'm overreacting or not, is Sparty, Michigan State. And then I'm going to talk about a team that I did actually react to and adjusted quite a bit in my ratings just after seeing one game. And so most of the time you want to be careful and passive when you're adjusting, I think, just after 1 week of games. In like, you know, a case like Hawaii or Colorado State, we've now seen two games and both are, you know, pretty telling. So we've made adjustments on those teams. But Sparty's one where I wouldn't get too worried about and caught up in adjusting them down or being worried. I mean, I think Utah State, was it last year or the year prior, went into Wisconsin and was up, I think, 10-7 at halftime, or maybe Wisconsin tied it with a kick right before half. They were playing pretty well in Wisconsin. They ended up doing it. And I feel like Michigan State's kind of done this a few times with lesser opponents and inferior opponents. I like them quite a bit. I adjusted Utah State up, and I'd already bet their season win total over. And I adjusted Sparty down slightly, but not a ton, because the closing line was very similar to where my number was anyways. And so I actually bet them -5 a couple days back against Arizona State, a team that on the flip side rolled, and I think they were up 49-0 at one point against Texas San Antonio. So my team not to overreact on, I did not overreact, and I am backing this week, is actually Michigan State. You have one, and that kind of fits the bill on the same side there?
You know, I agree with Michigan State. I think that's one where you look at Utah State, you know, came into the bowl last year. They were actually playing really well at the end of the year. I think they lost to New Mexico State, but this is kind of a team it seemed like Steele was pretty high on. You know, the program seems like it's trending upward. So I wasn't really surprised that, you know, Michigan State kind of slept on them, and it seems like they just let them have underneath routes all game, and Utah State just, you know, moved the ball down the field at will on a couple of those drives. So I don't know. I think we're going to get a more focused effort from Michigan State this week for sure, and I'm with you on that one. But the team I was going to say I didn't want to overreact to is BYU. I think that's a team where we look at the other side of that game, Arizona, new offensive, or, you know, new coaching staff, new scheme, all that, and then you're replacing all 5 offensive linemen. They lost 3 to graduation, and then 2 others were hurt for the game. So BYU lining up against an all-new offensive line in a new system. I don't know how good Arizona is yet. We just got to kind of see. I think that's something we're going to find out this week against Houston for sure. But I don't know if I'm all in on BYU being, you know, back necessarily. They had a really rough go of it last year. I don't know if they're all the way back to where they were a couple years ago. But I think this is going to be a really good test this week against Cal.
I had the same. So first off, what you're getting at is you like Cal this week, then?
Yeah,
potentially.
Definitely.
Okay, so I know Matt has bet a little bit on. I think it was +3.5 that you officially got. The thing, I was in the same sentiments you were here. We got to kind of just wait and see on BYU. But after that Arizona game, I was actually more impressed. I Our Arizona numbers are way off. I know as far as this Houston game comes up, I actually think Arizona should just be a slight dog. You might have been right around where the market is. So,
yeah, I think I was close.
And I ended up betting Arizona plus 4.5, and I want to get into that game a little bit too. But that BYU game was really significant to me for a couple of reasons. They dominated the Arizona front in defense, kind of like the way Bama does, or at least Bama of old, where they just maul you and gas you and just are so much stronger up front on the offensive line. They can just eat 4 or 5 yards at worst every carry. And that's how they did it, is Arizona kept the ball out of Tate's hands, kept the ball out of the Arizona offense, and just kept the defense fresh. But the one thing everyone's getting on is Sumlin and taking so many shots downfield and not using Tate as a runner. And I thought he was going to make adjustments at halftime, which he didn't. I know you want to bet on BYU second half, actually. I think they scored 21 in the third quarter. It was basically a free roll at that point. The setup with Sumlin, I think, the more I thought about it, I thought it was a really high-level coaching job. And people, I got to make sure I articulate this correctly, because people are like, what the heck? Tate only had 8 carries. He only had 14 yards. BYU, they went the USC method. Towards the end of last year, USC stacked 9 in the box against Tate and said, we dare you to beat us over the top in the air. And Tate couldn't really do it. And USC ended up beating him. Teams kind of did the same thing similarly down the stretch. Of the late last year, BYU did that exact same thing too. They stacked the box. Arizona wasn't able to run it. When Tate did run it, he had nothing. 8 carries just for 14 yards. But what Sumlin did is he said, we have to take what the defense gives us. And we also said, we're going to have to throw. It's going to set up our run game to win this year, to be anything special this year. And they were a Pac-12 South candidate, not really sleeper. Like, they were one of the favorites. So they might have been the second or third favorite. And in order to do that, to reach that, I think Sumlin was right. Like, we need to show that we can throw the ball. And so they did. And they took a lot of deep shots because BYU said, beat us down the field, beat us deep. And BYU was really smart because, one, Tate isn't a great – and he isn't an accurate passer. But the couple times that he did throw a ball that would have been caught, BYU pass interfered intentionally, and it was just a 15-yard penalty. And then there was one ball BYU couldn't get to that his receiver actually dropped. That would have been a touchdown that maybe swings the game. It only ended up being a 5-point game. So I actually liked the mindset and the angle that someone was going and attacking that BYU game at. And so I know you downgraded Arizona a lot more than I did, and you're kind of on the side that BYU isn't really much, and it was Arizona that's not as good, and we have a lot to learn about them. And I will admit their offensive line did struggle. That was part of it. It wasn't like BYU, but stacking 9 is just tough to run through anyways. So I'm on the side that I think actually BYU might be a little bit better, and that Arizona's fine. I think they were kind of correctly rated entering the season, at least my rating was. So we'll see, obviously, in this next game. But before the season, I would have had Arizona a favorite on the road at Houston. And I actually have it now where it's just flipped a little bit, where Houston's a short fave. But I bet Arizona at plus 4.5. And I kind of disagree with your play, even as much as my number says to disagree with it, too, with the Cal bet. Also, the Bowers 3 quarterback thing's really strange against UNC. And I'm not really sure what to see. They're not naming a starter until right before kickoff. And there's a lot of question marks there.
Yeah, going back to the Cal game, I think that game last week was really interesting against North Carolina, because that's usually not a team that gets in a defensive, grinded out battle where both sides, really dominate defensively. But, my argument for Cal's offense, and, they definitely did struggle. It wasn't pretty yards per play wise or anything. But when you jump out 17-0 midway through the second quarter, and your defense is dominating the game, there's just no need to be aggressive on offense, So they were able to stay conservative. I know that I believe there's like quite a bit of pressure on Bowers, and he was rushed quite a bit, and he didn't play very well. But I don't think they necessarily needed to be clicking on all cylinders, because they had that 3-score lead. And you kind of saw that in the second half. They sat back, and it kind of hurt them a little bit being conservative, and North Carolina came back and kind of made it interesting. But I don't think the Cal offense is necessarily as bad as we saw in that game. And so I want to see, how they do. And I think the bigger matchup is the Cal defense against BYU offense. And I know you really like the BYU offense, and they do have the new offensive coordinator who seems like an upgrade. But
it has to be. There is no way.
Yeah, I mean, it was
you
so
could have
bad
been calling
year,
plays this year, and it was obviously an upgrade.
Yeah, but I mean, I want to see how they do against a really what I think is legitimate Cal defense, and I really like what Wilcox is doing on that side of the ball. So I think this is going to be a much tougher test on that side of the ball, and I don't know. I want to see how they come off of that game, winning a big upset on the road at a Pac-12 school. Can they get up emotionally and beat another one at home this week?
The spot sets up for Cal, too. I just wish – this is why I'm just kind of so – I'm not going to touch the game, I guess, oriented right now. But it's like first road game of the year in altitude for Cal. It's just such a – like, it's supposed to be the right spot, but I think it could easily counter back. And I don't think BYU is ever as – people got to remember, and I am a BYU fan. That's where I went to school for my undergrad. People that don't know, They had I think it was 7 quarterbacks take snaps last year, and 6 were quarterbacks. One was like a wildcat type quarterback. So 6 quarterbacks took snaps last year. It's hard to win that many games when you have 6 quarterbacks taking snaps. So that's part of it. They're going to be, they're healthier. Obviously, they're going to be a more improved team this year. So I'm going to move on to my team that I actually reacted to pretty heavily. And I had already bet their season wins under 5.5, but UCLA is ridiculously bad.
That was terrible.
So I had my number, I think, was like 16.5 for the game, and it closed way lower. I think it got to 13.5, 14. And on top of that, Cincinnati just destroyed them the entire game. And Will and Spade got injured, and they had to put in, is it Dorian Thompson Robinson? I think Bishop Gorman guy, if I recall. Mark nodding his head. Thank you. So he's supposed to be the future there. He's kind of more of a Chip Kelly-style quarterback, and he got a little run, but even they couldn't do anything. I just think they're supremely outmatched, obviously, against Oklahoma this week. But I just mean in general when it comes to talent, who they're going to be seeing most every week in the Pac-12. So I am glad I have under 5.5 wins now, but I downgraded them, I think, more than any other team. And I already, I think, was a little bit lower than most on UCLA. So that's my overreact yes team, where I'm just, I mean, as juicy as it looks to take 30 points with UCLA against Oklahoma, and when you shock me, Oklahoma just, you know, did an FAU and, you know, scored 70-something or whatever they ended up winning by. So I'm from LA. That's my home kind of team. I'm BYU alum, but my LA team's UCLA, and it's just kind of a sad state of affairs right now. It'll take a couple of years before Kelly has anything going there.
Well, I watched the second half of that game. I didn't really like, you know, I just didn't trust Cincinnati. You know, I know UCLA had a lot of question marks. Didn't really trust betting Cincinnati on the road, but, you know, I got to halftime of that game. I looked at the box. Cincinnati was really outplaying them. So I ended up playing Cincinnati second half and watching the entire thing. And Cincinnati literally ran the ball into the line 3 times every drive in the second half. They were just as vanilla as you could get, trying to not blow the lead once they got the safety. And UCLA just couldn't do anything with the freshman quarterback. So I don't know exactly if Chip Kelly didn't really prepare for Spate getting injured or being as bad as he was. And, you know, maybe he just wasn't ready. I don't know how exactly they're going to adjust. I do think the defense was better, but they didn't really face much of a test. You know, Cincinnati wasn't doing much. But the way Oklahoma looked last week and the way that offense can score, yeah, I just don't think there's any way you can take the points, even if it is Chip Kelly and, you know, a somewhat talented team. I don't know. I'm passing at the very least and, you know, just kind of seeing if they can figure it out.
Nice. You have a team. I hate to say because overreact means that you did a bad job reacting, but is there a team that you reacted to and adjusted heavily over from Saturday?
Well, I'm going to say a team that I was really down on going into the season, and they were even worse than I expected, so I was aggressive moving them down, was UTSA. They were terrible against Arizona State. I mean, you look at that game, Arizona State had 9 sacks, which is like far and away.
That's hard to do.
The second closest team last week had 6, and so they just dominated the line of scrimmage. UTSA couldn't do anything. This is an Arizona State team with a lot of questions still, you know, don't really know, you know, with the new coaching staff and the defense, how things are going to work out. And they just really buried UTSA. So I think that team, they, you know, they lost a lot of talent from last year's team. They lost, Conference USA Defensive Player of the Year. So a lot of good talent on a team that should have made a bowl last year, and they got snubbed at 6-5.
Yep,
so it just looks like it's going to be an ugly year there. So, like, I actually laid with Baylor going into this week. Laying double digits on the road with Baylor right now seems crazy, but I just think this UTSA team's a mess, and I could see it being a really ugly season there.
So they were – couple things to say. One, this maybe bodes well for our Sparty bet at -5, 5.5, just because ASU might not be that good if UTSA is that much of a mess. But I generally like these spots where you have this team. So UTSA, if I recall, completely new system offensively this year they're instilling, also defensively. And so it's basically brand new season trying to figure out if they can put something together. And this either generally works and actually does well because the coaches can just kind of, you know, fit things and the players can take it in and actually make it happen, or is a complete disaster. And it reminds me a lot of a few years ago when Bowling Green lost Dino Babers to Syracuse. They hired a bunch of assistants from Texas Tech and wanted to do the air raid thing.
It was a disaster.
And it was like a first-year head coach, a first-year OC, a first-year DC. And they went into Ohio State, I think it was like 70-3 was the final score. Maybe 77. They might have actually scored a touchdown. I don't recall exactly. But I think Ohio State was only laying 20-ish, 21 points in that game. It was crazy low. And very similar this year with Oregon State implementing a bunch of new stuff, which actually now might look positive offensively because they ran it all over Ohio State. Defensively, it was a mess. They gave up a ton. But this, I think UTSA is one of those teams. So I agree with you where they needed to be massively adjusted down just because this looks like they're on the mess side of that bell curve of how you, when you have so many new systems being implemented at one time. I think you got a really good number on Baylor. What's the current numbers, like 15.5, 16?
Yeah,
now?
I think it's up over two touchdowns.
Just to clarify, you wouldn't bet it at this point, right?
Yeah, right now I don't think I'd bet it at this. But, you know, just it's funny to see that number shoot up when you look at Baylor, a 1-11 team last year who, you know, wasn't actually that impressive defensively against the FCS team last week. And the number shoots up from, you know, 10 at open to now 14.5, 15. I think that says a lot about where UTSA is at. So that's one of those teams. And if you can identify these teams, obviously UTEP and Kansas, disaster games against FCS teams. So, like, you drop them quite a bit. But if you can identify these teams that are just god-awful right off the bat, you can save yourself a lot of money not bothering with them throughout the year.
So we have another segment that will, I think, just be for today, unless there's some other stuff that comes up. But we wanted to, and this was actually Matt's idea, so I'm going to drill him with the questions, tee him up, and then I'll probably respond with any thoughts that I think I should add. But we're going to discuss certain things and whether Matt believes they're factored into the market or not. So meaning when you see a line, let's say the line we're talking about Baylor, right, at 15.5, 16, 16.5 now I think I saw it, Chris, 15 in town. So I guess there's kind of a little discrepancy there. But if you see that line, like, what does that actually even mean? Is that including the fact that UTSA might be a mess? Is it including things like injuries or a situational spot? So I'm going to ask Matt, and we're going to start with that first one. Pretty basic. Some of these people are like, why are you even discussing it? But do you think injuries are factored into the market generally from week to week?
Oh, injuries definitely are factored in. Injuries are a really difficult thing. It's kind of a guessing game for everyone on both sides. I think you have to really stay on top of it. I mean, first of all, you kind of have to decide how much you value it. You know, I think you'll see in a lot of cases, you know, when stars are out, other guys elevate their play, or maybe the other team won't come to play as much. Yeah. So some people don't even really value injuries all that much, but it's definitely factored into the market. And I think what you have to do is be aware of what injuries were known when the number came out, and, you know, what guys probably weren't going to play or expected not to play, and what's changed since then. So, you know, you'll see it factored into that opening number, but might not necessarily be factored in when they announce on Wednesday that he's going to play. So if it hasn't moved yet, you know, you might be able to have some value there if you get that information first. So that's one of those things where you really have to kind of stay on top of it throughout the course of the week, or for basketball, you know, throughout the day, and kind of have an idea of, was this first number factored in or not? And if I don't think it was, or if I think it was and there's something's changed, I can take advantage of it.
Yeah, the timing of the actual news is obviously going to be huge. Like you were saying, you go into opening a number, and some books won't actually open a number because they're waiting on a pretty crucial injury if it's a big name quarterback or something. But you have to be able to assess when the announcement's made, and then if there was movement in the market, and you'll be able to see really how much, at least to that point in time, that move or that injury was worth. I will say a lot of the modeling guys, the numbers truthers that I talk to for all sports, they disregard injuries more than I would have anticipated. And even like, so someone like, and you won't mind I'm sharing this, like Rufus, because he was tweeting about it. Rufus Peabody, he does NFL modeling. He was talking about, he did a poll question about how much you would value Le'Veon Bell not being the running back for the Steelers per game if you had to actually assess like that individual's worth. And I think he was something like 0.48 points, so like half a point for Le'Veon Bell, which seems like pretty, I mean, he's maybe the best running back in the entire league, and he catches so many balls out of the backfield. He's one of the most valuable running backs, and maybe he's only worth like half a point to a spread. So that's the type of thing I guess you want to actually be able to assess, whether it be a quarterback or a skill player or a group of defenders, which we've seen like the Eagles tonight, the line moves so much, they had a couple defenders that are out, and then on top of Wentz and Alshon Jeffrey. So assessing those and being able to at least value them somewhat closely, I think is going to give you an edge. And then when it comes to the market, obviously those are going to be factoring in, like Matt talked about. So the next one here is just situational stuff. Like I put in parentheses here on my script, like a sandwich spot, a rivalry game, if there's series history, do you think those are factored into the market?
You know, I do think that's one of those things. The last few years, maybe the last 5 to 10 years, it started, you know, everyone's kind of aware of it, you know, coming off the big game, or, you know, have the look-ahead spot, or, you know, all these situations people like to look for. I do think it is kind of factored into the number now, and if you want to play a team that's on the favorable side of one of those situational plays, you're probably going to be paying a premium for it. You're probably going to have to, you know, take a little bit of a worse number than what, you know, true power ratings would say you should. So it's one of those things you really got to be careful, and I think you have to actually try to go through and identify maybe why the spots aren't as good or bad as the market might believe they are, and try to go from there, as opposed to just saying blanketly this team's going to play bad because they had a big game last week. I think you got to try to really dig in and figure out why this team might actually play well, or why, you know, they're definitely not going to show up. I think it's one of those things you can't just assume every time. that, you know, the situation's going to, you know, come into play?
Two things. So, and I've always said, you know, probably 15 years ago, you could have blindly bet stuff like this and been profitable. But like you mentioned, that gauge of 5 to 10 years, I think it's caught up, which means the market is factoring it in. And, you know, ultimately it comes down to this. If you think there's a good situational spot, however you want to classify it, whatever type of spot, you at least need to have some sort of idea what the number should be otherwise to be able to compare that. You know, if there's a situational spot X because someone just came off of a big win and you think the number should be 3 and it comes out 4, why would you be betting the team -4 that you think should be 3 just because, you know, they're going up against a team, let's say, that's coming off of a big win or has a big game on deck against a rival? So you need to at least be able to do the numbers side of it and have something to compare to then to make your decision so you aren't at least paying that premium. For me, I'll still look at a spot and be like, you know, this is a good spot. As long as it makes sense with the numbers too, it's kind of just nice, like bonus points, right? So it can't hurt to be in a good spot, but if you can't compare it and realize you're paying a premium, then it's going to cost you ultimately. And I think it's kind of like flipping coins in the end. Next one, recent form. Do you think that's factored into the market?
Yeah, I definitely think you see that. I think the challenge with recent form is trying to figure out what exactly, how much it's been factored in compared to, you know, season-long stats or season-long projections, trying to figure out, you know, are they really overvaluing what this team did last week? Or is this, you know, are they really kind of ignoring that and sticking with their season-long projection? So it's one of those things. What I've started doing with my power ratings is I created another column where I can see the adjustment from the prior week. And that way I can kind of go through and see that, you know, I don't, you know, maybe over, I was too aggressive and adjusted a team and their power rating after the last game. So that's one thing that, you know, you really try to be careful with. But, you know, recent form definitely comes into play. And I think the key is just trying to figure out, you know, is the team really playing well or is it just kind of, you know, a facade and they're not playing as well as the scores indicate?
So let me ask you then, do you think recent form or any bias one way or the other offers opportunity each week then?
Yeah, I think so. If you can identify maybe, you know, kind of what we've talked about with some of these games where you've said, well, I don't think the team they played was as good as, you know, people expected necessarily, so I was kind of down on them. So maybe this performance isn't as impressive as we thought. So, you know, kind of trying to pick apart what happened in those games and maybe did they catch some breaks? Did things fall their way or, you know, something happened that kind of had a domino effect in their favor? So you just really got to go through and, you know, with everything, like try to figure out, you know, what's real, what really happened and, you know, how it's going to affect them.
Even like a game-to-game box score or final score, I should say, can be really misleading and you have to dive into box scores just to kind of see, it, you know, if you can't watch the game completely, at least tells the story some. And so if a team is super hot and they've been adjusted, say, like 10 points in the market in 2 or 3 weeks, like, say, Hawaii, you got to kind of dive in and figure out why. And I know both of us still have the Hawaii number for this week against Rice
quite a bit
lower.
Yeah.
I think I'll pull it up just because I'm curious. I think you were 12-something, and I'm 13.6. So, I mean, I was a little higher on Hawaii entering the season maybe. But it's tough to really, like, then say, all right, well, have I adjusted enough? Or should I be betting Rice plus 17.5 this week? So I usually just kind of play the wait and see approach until you get maybe a couple more data points, a couple more games, and then go from there. Last one. Or no, there's two more. Sorry. First one, this is, I think, a no. But trends. Do you think trends are factored into the market? The quarterbacks with blonde hair went 44 and 44 last Saturday.
I think anything that's generalized that, like, spans across every team, for the most part, is very dangerous as far as trends are concerned. I don't think, you know, a very vague trend like that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's just silly. But you know what I mean? There's very vague trends that just don't really have any meaning. But if you can find a team-specific trend or maybe find a tendency from a team, a certain way that they play, when they're favored or underdogs by a certain amount, you know, how they, you know, maybe game plan or approach the situation, you know, like the academies are always really tough as double-digit dogs, you know, stuff like that. So if you can identify that, it'll help you understand maybe why your number's off or what you're missing in a game. So that's just one of those things where I, you know, with all trends, you don't want to get caught up in the silly ones like the day of the week and all that crap. You know, you want to try to find things that are specific to the team that make sense, why this team wouldn't play as well because of this or, you know, might play better because of this.
So there's one example that I think I use quite a bit that I think has at least some relevance. I don't know if it's factored into the market necessarily regularly or not, but I'll get to that one in a second. But one this week, a separate aside, is I think Alabama in week 2s under Saban has only covered once.
I think it's 0-7 after a neutral site game, I believe, is a stat.
It's usually against a weaker opponent where they're laying 30 or 40-something.
Yeah, and this is a really interesting game.
So it's an interesting game because now the dynamic where their backup is Jalen Hurts, and they might not just run the ball into a pile as often. I don't know. I'm probably not going to bet it. And it's not like it's Arkansas State, right? It's not like they're a horrible team either. Like, so I don't know. I probably would lean that side, and not because of the trend, but I think the number's a little bit high. But I'm also a little worried that Jalen Hurts maybe gets to throw more often in the fourth quarter or something, and then it ends up being uglier. But
I'm actually all involved in that game. I got Arkansas State. Somebody popped up 38 town a couple of days ago, so I took that. I think I would probably still take down to 37 on that. I think the trend is strong enough, makes enough sense. Well, it's not the only reason, but this Arkansas State team is probably the class of the Sun Belt, and you know, their offense is loaded with Power 5 transfers, and they were really good last year. So I think you look at some of Alabama's games, like Colorado State last year, I think is a good game to compare this to. A little more high scoring. Colorado State was able to move the ball in the second half once Bama had kind of extended their lead, and you know, it was pretty much out of reach. So it could be one of those situations where you see a lot of points in the second half, and similar to, I guess, last week's Alabama game, you know, maybe find a way to sneak over in the fourth quarter with some late points.
Last one here. I think it came from a friend. I'm not sure if you were talking to him on the side or you posted something on Twitter, but yards per play differential, do you think that's factored into the market?
You know, I do think that is to some degree. I think it's still something that can be exploited. Like if you can find maybe something misleading, you know, where a team had a big yards per play due to a big play, you know, an 85-yard run or something like that. I think that's something, if you look at the yards per play for the Florida State game, definitely would be thrown off by Akers busting that. 90 yard run. So that's something you just got to try to find. Definitely over time, once you get a 3, 4, 5 week sample or more, I think the books are a little more aware. You know, like UCF was just a yards per play monster last year, and you really started to see it reflected in the numbers. But if you can figure out why that number might be wrong, you know, you might be able to take advantage of that.
Yeah, a lot of the modeling stuff is obviously going to be incorporating yards per play numbers when you're trying to project, you know, how good a team is. And it ultimately is this: if you're gaining more yards than your opponent, then you're more often than not going to be scoring more points than your opponent, and then you have to kind of just be able to go from there and decide what a spread should be or a total should be. But you're doing something cool this year, which I've always just kind of, not necessarily eye tested it, but you kind of know, like, okay, you know, Louisville only gained whatever it was, 3 yards per play, but they're going up against Bama's defense. So they probably are better than 3 yards per play. So you can't really, you know, project the next Louisville game using 3 yards per play. You need to weight it to some degree. And so you're kind of doing your own version and formula for an adjusted strength of schedule yards per play that I think is going to be positive. It would be beneficial this year.
Yeah, I just wanted to try something. You know, I have no idea how it's going to work out. I'm not going to base a ton of my action on it early or anything, but I wanted to try to create some kind of like adjusted yards per play number. So I thought, well, I do position ratings for the preseason power ratings. I go through and rate by position. So why not go through and, you know, add up the sum of those offensive ratings for each team, or those defensive ratings, you know, combined with the coach, obviously. And, you know, those are based a lot on talent, recruiting, you know, on top of performance. So, you know, a lot of teams that might not necessarily have dominant offenses but recruit well, like a, you know, Miami or something like that, you know, is going to be higher than a good offense from the MAC. So I figure it's a pretty good indication from those ratings how much better or worse than the average, national average, a team is. So what I did was created kind of a multiplier based on how, you know, far above or, you know, below the average they were. And so a team like Alabama, when they'll play Louisville, their yards per play will be multiplied by 1.4 because Alabama's, you know, multiplier is 1.4. They're that much better than everyone else. And then on the flip side, I'm going to divide their yards per play allowed by that amount, so it reduces it. So I don't really know how it's going to work. I've only done 1 week, but it's going to be kind of interesting after a few weeks to see. It's just sort of a strength of schedule adjusted thing, and see if, you know, some things stand out and maybe something that I can't see, you know, on the blind eye that, you know, maybe I catch from doing those numbers. So I don't know. It'd be interesting to see, you know, kind of what happens.
Yeah, I definitely think once you have 3 or 4 games and then you're starting conference play and maybe even a game into conference play, then the numbers will, if there are huge discrepancies, will stand out a ton. And you can say, like, okay, well, this is a few games of data now. This is probably worth actually paying attention to.
Well, I can already tell you Old Dom is going to be one team, and Liberty, because I had Liberty rated so low and the yards per play was so bad that it's just way out of whack.
It's
so I'm going to be interested to see kind of after a couple weeks if it, you know, settles in a little bit and the numbers are trustworthy or not. I don't really know exactly what to expect, but, you know, I just figured I'd try something.
We'll follow it week to week. We'll keep people posted in case you bomb or if you retire.
Might just be a total disaster.
last thing, we only had one caller, so I guess we owe Larry like a shirt or something for calling in early.
We covered
on,
like the first game on the rotation, I feel like.
Yeah, and then, we're supposed to just go down the list. I got to incentivize people to start calling. It's probably bad that the Thursday night game's on because it started right as we were starting after the delay. But I wanted to talk about what you did actually more than anything is kind of the concept of just betting absolute disaster teams that look that bad early on, whether it be like Colorado State, New Mexico State, we've seen play twice and get absolutely destroyed. The reason it came up, I was looking. So let me pull up my numbers, actually. I should just be doing this anyways. The New Mexico State game against Utah State, I have it at 18.8. I believe you are a little bit higher than me, but you can get 24 now. And I was considering backing New Mexico State at plus 24 after USU goes in to East Lansing, almost upsets Sparty on the road. They end up losing. They're coming back home. They're playing a team, though, that when I looked at it a little bit more, they actually lost to in the bowl. And New Mexico State, if I recall, Utah State missed 4 field goals and had a fumble inside the 5. Like, Utah State probably should have won that game. So they maybe actually have this kind of on their minds, and Utah State should win. Obviously, New Mexico State's looked so bad. But 24 points, I don't know. It keeps staring at me. I think that's the one bet that I'm going to be, I feel like I'm going to be so mad I don't make come Saturday night. But if I do bet it, and it's 49-3, like, it just seems like that's going to happen if I do bet it. So I've stayed away so far. But what are your thoughts on these types of setups or dynamics in these games?
See, I feel like I've really been stressing this. I actually forgot this was the team we were going to talk about. This was going to be my team that you should overreact to, New Mexico State. I just don't see the point or appeal of betting these teams who have shown you absolutely nothing. I just don't get it. I tried for 5 to 10 years to bet these teams in weeks 2 or 3. I'd say don't overreact. You know, these teams will bounce back, and it's just such a mess. Like, you look at New Mexico State. They lost so much offensively from pretty much the best team they've had in probably the last 15, 20 years. And their defense was supposed to be their strength, and now half their defense is on the injury report. So it's just a total mess for a program that doesn't have a lot of talent or depth or anything like that. So I just, you know, obviously the number's high. I made it lower. I had it lower last week against Minnesota. But until they show some kind of pulse, I just can't. I can't touch New Mexico State.
I can't do UTEP
or any of those teams, you know?
Yeah, so this one's a week 2 game technically, but they've played 2 games already, which it makes it more interesting because they've actually been really bad twice already. And I should say against Minnesota, I think there were 5 starting defensive players on the injury report. I'm not sure if all 5 will be on there again this week, but definitely worth watching because that Minnesota line ballooned quite a bit, probably because of the showing against Wyoming, but partly because of the factors there on defense. Like, these teams, they have their starters, like they're 2 or 3 deep at a similar level when it comes to, you know, New Mexico State level schools. So to have 5 starting defenders out is a big deal. And that's ultimately probably why I'm going to be staying away. But it's just one of those where it just stands out. Every time when you're looking at your number and there's a 5-point discrepancy and you have key-ish numbers like 20, 21, 24 in there, I don't know if I'll end up doing it. But that's my non-play of the week, if we want to call it that. A play I want to bet that I probably won't.
That's just a hard pass for me. Just no interest.
I think that's it, man. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, no problem. It was fun.
Yeah, we'll get more callers next time. I'm going to start.
You're just going to have to pay people or something.
that we ship out to people who call in or have Mark's friends call in and script something together. I don't know. But hey, it was a good show. I'm glad we got through it. We'll be back every Thursday night. It's planned at about 6 o'clock Las Vegas Pacific time. Until then, you guys, take it easy. Good luck this weekend, and we'll talk next time.